Welcome to the Access Astrology Podcast. I'm Arwen O'Neill, and I'm here with my good friend Allison Price, and we are coming to you from Vancouver, Canada. Today we are going to be talking about the astrology from August 10th through 23rd, and our 360 topic of the day is the Sun. So we're going to be talking about what the Sun means in astrology. It might not be 100% obvious. and we'll be talking about the moon phases. We've got a couple of book reviews. Yes, all of that stuff will be happening.
And we want to mention again, I think, that we're up on iTunes now.
Yes, we definitely want to mention that. We are on iTunes. You can find us there. You can search either Access Astrology or just Astrology, and you'll find us. And please subscribe, leave comments, ratings, reviews, whatever. Yeah.
We'd love to hear from you.
We would. And all of our podcasts beginning to now, almost a year, are up there. And you can also find us on accessastrology.com. You can subscribe there and find our shows, show notes and charts and links and whatnot and everything.
And we have an email address.
Yes, accessastrology@gmail.com.
Good.
So we would love to hear from you. All of you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the transits, what have we got coming up?
The first thing we've got is August 11th. And what is it about that day, August 11th? Something.
Yes.
Might be someone's birthday.
It is, it's true. 21 again.
Yay, happy birthday on August 11th. Also, we have Venus moving into Leo,
yes,
which is
excellent.
A happy place for it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big, grandiose, exuberant, happy, generous sort of place for
the
love planet,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
as they say. Sort of a demonstrative, expressive place.
Yes, yes.
This planet. And then we have, on August 15th, we'll have Mercury moving into Virgo, which...
That's a good thing. It sits its own sign.
Yeah, Mercury's pretty happy in Virgo.
Mm-hmm,
I speak from experience there.
Right.
Yeah, so analytical, you know, all those Virgo things, studious.
That we love.
Yes, we do. It's important. Yeah, you know, cataloging, sorting, archiving things.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Number crunching.
Yes, exactly.
Alphabetizing.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever seen, it does come under the sort of horror genre, the movie called Dreamcatcher. I'm not going to go out and say that it's a great movie. It's got its moments. It's a Stephen King short story adapted to a movie, and it stars the guy from Homeland, you know, the red-haired, he's very, you know, very distinctive looking, and he's a character who, part of his thing as a character is he's got, part of it takes place in his mind, and his mind is this amazing library set, which is like all these amazing rooms that are all kind of spiral staircase-y and books and shelves and cataloged photographs and everything. And it's the picture of what I picture the brain, you know, from its...
Inside of Virgo's brain.
Yeah, exactly.
Books, yes.
Just, you know, one of those crazy libraries of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's Mercury in Virgo.
there's some visualization.
Yes. Yes. Okay, so that was the 15th.
Yes.
Then the 17th of August, we've got Venus conjunct Jupiter.
Excellent day.
Yeah.
Excellent day.
Yeah, so like just big old, you know.
I always like that day because once a year, Venus is conjunct Jupiter.
Mm-hmm.
And the two benefics come together.
Yeah.
And because it shifts each year, but that is really a good day to get married.
I was just thinking,
yes.
That's right in the middle of the summer.
And it can be a very good day to start a lot of things if you want them to be beneficial.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I don't know what
day that is, but it must be, a Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, back to school shopping, if you're doing that whole thing, it'd be a good time for that. You'll definitely find, you know, flattering things might spend a little more than you plan to, but it'll probably be worth,
It's bringing good things together, and that's really for everyone, because it's Venus conjunct Jupiter.
Mm-hmm.
In Leo, I mean...
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a whole lot of positive energy there.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's see. So on the next day, Mercury opposite Neptune.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a bit of a mixed sort of bag there. It's kind of, cloudy judgment, maybe non-linear thinking.
You're deceiving yourself.
Yeah, a little bit of deception, illusions and whatnot. Foggy.
Foggy,
chances of fog. And then on the 21st, Mercury is going to be trine Pluto.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so, good time to use your words powerfully, you know? Maybe sort of use your research and you know, probing and sort of investigative skills if you have those. And
interesting, you have to watch out for headlines on a day like that when Pluto's there trying again. Whatever it is, you know, there's probably more to it than meets the eye.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Definitely. If you can use that energy and if you can, if you can be the one harnessing that communicative sort of boost of power, that would be that'd be the day to sort of craft some sort of, you know, revelatory, I don't know,
start your novel, even
tweet.
Yes, a tweet. Start with a tweet, but write a novel. A novel in tweets.
Yeah. Oh God, that's what that. I think there might even be a contest, a yearly. Oh God, never mind. Yeah. It's just awful. Or wonderful, whichever you. And then on the next day, the 22nd, Sun moving into Virgo.
Sun into Virgo. Yes. Already, hey?
I know. Mm. And that's the, I keep saying this, but it's like the back to school aspect. You know, that's when you kind of begin to think.
Sun in Virgo.
Yeah, the Sun moving into Virgo. For me, that's what I think of, even though, you know, no reason to think that personally, but it's sort of like, okay, now you have
the
to start.
The whole stores are geared up. Any mother on the planet's ready with that, getting the back to school stuff.
Totally, yeah.
When the Sun's in Virgo, definitely, because they go back when the Sun's in Virgo.
Right. You start thinking about all your classes and getting everything organized for early mornings and, you know, carpooling if
all
you do that.
All the stuff they need, the stuff, it's just endless.
Yeah, no kidding. But, you know, also in the corporate world, a lot of fiscal years start in September, so.
Do they? Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Now, of course, in South Africa, the school year starts in January, so it's just kind of weird that it starts September here.
January seems logical, actually.
Well, yeah, I suppose.
I think here it was all about, I don't know, like farming and whatnot. I guess that's why.
I don't know. Yeah. I think the big holiday's in summer here, right?
Yeah.
But in Africa, the big holiday's over Christmas time.
Yeah.
You got the 4 weeks off then. Yeah. So, back to school.
Yeah. So that's,
and that's actually interesting. By the way, I was working on, which will probably be out by the time this podcast goes live, is working on a back to school, or not back to school, I'm actually writing a piece about the first day at big school, which is the elementary 6-year-old child going to school for the first time this September. There will be a piece on my blog by the time this goes up. About that, because of the children that were born in 2009, 8, 9.
So, yeah. Interesting.
I could say more about that, but I'll...
So the first year of kids with with
going
Pluto and Capricorn,
school.
Like a whole new generation, right? Pluto and Capricorn.
Well,
these
children were born in 2008,
9. Yeah, yeah. Well, if they're born after September, they would have.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of how it was and all the rest of it. So, yeah, anyway, if I've got it up there, I'll definitely link to this podcast.
Totally.
In the pipeline.
Yeah.
I like the back to school stuff. I like the children stuff because I always do a children's chart special at that time. Maybe it would be too soon to say that, but I'm mentioning it anyway.
Well, you have a handful of your own as well. Not, you do. You've got a few.
I've only got one left going to school this year.
Well,
going to grade 12. So
yeah, there's still count. The others still
stretch.
Count. The others, it's like check done. You success.
Going, but we've got last one going into grade 12.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, congratulations to her. That's awesome. No, that's great. Oh, and you, obviously.
Thank you.
It's a hell of an accomplishment.
Anyway, so yeah.
Excellent. All right, what is the moon up to?
The moon, as we know, the moon is always moving. So... So this in this fortnight period that we're looking at now for this particular podcast, we've got the full moon on August the 10th. So the moon is full then in Aquarius, the sun is in Leo, and it's starting very early on in our forecast period, and that would be great. It's the highlight. You know, if you're going to have a barbecue, do it then. Mm. It'll be a great evening, or any other entertainment. I'm not sure what day that is.
It's a Sunday.
Other kind of entertainment, definitely with that full moon there, that will be very good for socializing because the moon is in Aquarius, friends, and that kind of, and building up your social life.
Yeah, interesting conversations, definitely.
Yeah,
I like that.
And then later on, on the August the 17th, we have the last quarter, and that would be, I believe, in Taurus. So then during this period, we're talking about the 2 week period from
the 10th to the 23rd.
From the 10th to the 23rd, the moon is going from the full, so it's totally going through the total waxing phase, and it will be going towards the new moon in the next period. So the moon is getting smaller in light, the light is diminishing, therefore things we want to do should be reduction things. And we spoke a little bit before about its dispersal as well. If you have things you want giving away, letting go of things during this actual 2 week cycle.
Excellent.
So if you want to actually start a diet, it's always good to start one after the full moon, because then the moon reduces, and that's what you want to do.
Right. That's a good plan.
So it's not a good time to grow a business. It's time to
or to gain weight if you want to.
Yeah. Nobody.
I have one friend that, I do.
So maybe I'll put my money where my mouth is. But anyway, the moon is in the waxing cycle, half of its cycle this time. So, yeah.
Yeah. All right.
So those are the dates.
Well, excellent. That's the moon. Mm. Let's talk about the sun now.
Yeah, so we have our 360 topic, which is what we talk about, our main topic each time we get together. And this time we're doing the sun.
The sun. And we just... last time we talked about Leo, and Leo is ruled by the sun, and now we're talking about the sun.
Talking about the sun in particular.
In particular,
in
detail. In astrology, which is slightly different than just the sun as a giant nuclear ball of...
gas and...
Yes, and fire and all those things. And
So
how did this get started? The ancients. The ancients in their
wisdom.
In their wisdom with their fires and their campfires and their, you know, their scientists, they're shaman, they're, you know, whatever, sky watching.
Witch doctors or...
Yeah, yes, exactly. The early scientists and you know, sort of healers and all these different, everyone, all the little tribes that were all over the planet, they all watched the planets, they all watched the sun, they all watched and notated and made massive monuments in some cases, pyramids in some cases, you know, weird...
Henges.
Exactly. There isn't one ancient culture that we've managed to dig up that didn't follow what was going on in the sky and document it exhaustively and find significance in it. So obviously the sun is the biggest and most noticeable in the
curve
of life. That, you know, none of us would be here. The, you know, planets wouldn't be here if not for the gravitation of the sun and the energy that it provides to, you know, everything from phytoplankton and all these little green things that grow to, you know, top of the food chain as
perch.
As we perch, exactly.
Maybe tenuously, but we perch.
Yeah, exactly. But so the sun is considered a planet in astrology.
And why is that?
The sun and the moon are said to have sort of a... They're the luminaries in astrology.
It's
the sort of the mother and father of the... the family of planets, and you know, obviously they never actually thought that the Earth was flat. This is a myth. It's clearly, you know, even all the way back to early Greek astronomers, they knew the Earth was round and that the planets and the sun and that there was this whole, you know, rotational thing happening. They didn't know obviously that the sun was the center of it. That was one of them, actually, surprisingly, at least that we have the records still, because tons of them probably thought all kinds of things, and they were, you know, the Library of Alexandria burned, and, you know, we have no record of lots of that stuff, lots of those early thinkers. But actually, a couple of Greeks did believe that the sun was at the center of the cosmos, and, you know, it took until Copernicus and whatnot for that to come back around to being accepted. But... In the beginning, they appeared to be sort of equals. The sun, the moon, you know, they were roughly the same in size, and, you know, that's why eclipses work, obviously, which is so cool.
Yes.
And, you know, so we had these two lights in the sky, one ruled the day and one ruled the night, and they were given sort of equal weight in astrology and astronomy, and in the chart. So we've got the sun representing the father, and, you know, very, very traditional kind of delineation here, and the moon representing the mother, which we still have.
We do. We definitely do.
Yeah. Back then, obviously, you know, there were only the visible planets, which ended at Saturn. That's what sort of gave Saturn its sort of malefic, as they said, but more stern sort of, it was, because it was the end of the line, it was the last one.
The limitations of the solar system.
Exactly. And strangely enough, actually, Uranus is visible. is.
Well, I hear these young people with their beady eyes can see it, yes. I believe so. It depends.
I haven't seen it, but no. I hear it. Yeah, but they just, you have to look, you know, really, really in the right spot for a long time to see it. And they didn't until, 1781. But we're not talking about Uranus, we're talking about the sun.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So astrologers consider the sun a planet. We discuss it and say it's a planet. We all know it's not a planet.
We all know that, yeah. And it's just...
It's just one of those quirky things about astrology.
It is, yeah.
Okay.
So there. why? Because. Because that's how it is.
That's why. Yes. Yes. Okay.
Because that's why.
So the sun rises and sets.
It is, yeah. It does, well. Yeah. And what it means in astrology, in Western astrology... It's not the plane of the stars. It's not the constellations that make up the zodiac. It's the 12 evenly divided segments of the ecliptic around the Earth.
Right.
Is that how you would say it?
Yes. The plane of the ecliptic is the sun's path.
Right. It's not, but it's nothing to do with the constellations. So
no.
Yeah.
No. That's the sun goes through the zodiac signs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there are constellations up here, Orion and what have you, and they've got nothing to do. The sun doesn't go through them.
Yeah.
The sun has to go through the sign for it to be on the zodiac.
Yeah. And of course, they're all evenly, there's 30 degrees per thing, and, you know, clearly, constellations, it's, you know, where would one begin and end, and it's nothing to do with that.
Well, yeah, you're opening a can of worms with that one, but yes.
It's important to, you know, to know the difference, and that we know that. It's not, you know, oops, like, you know. Because that is a thing that people bring up once in a while, these.
I know, because back in the day when the ancients were sitting behind their campfires, that's when the sun entered Aries, it was the same constellation as the actual name.
Right.
And it's only through the procession of the equinoxes as it moved backwards that things have shifted. And now we're saying, yeah, but it's not really in Aries, it's in Taurus, or whatever.
But, yeah.
That's why we use the tropical zodiac.
Right. And also, it would be, you know, it would be 30 degrees evenly, you know, all the way around, as opposed to nebulous.
Whereas the Indian, the Vedics, they use the sidereal, which is that constellation. Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so
the sun in your chart, it's basically, I mean, there's three main things that, the first things that you kind of look at are the sun, the moon, and the ascendant.
Okay.
And the sun, obviously, you know, the month, the day you were born, it changes around the 20th-ish, 20th, 24th.
Changes signs.
And then, depending on what time you were born, that would be the rising sign, obviously.
Yes.
So if you're born around noon, like myself, for example, just a good example that I can pick out of the air.
The best example is your own chart, which you know intimately, right?
Exactly. So being a Virgo born in summer...
Were you born at noon?
I was born, near noon.
And I've got Scorpio rising. So the sun's at the top. So,
yeah, exactly. It's in the 10th house.
Okay, so you cross the sun...
Because that's where the sun is at the moment you were born.
Exactly. Yeah. So when the sun, say, rises, in this case, Leo, we're still in what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Leo would be on the ascendant, and by the time it got to the top, then Leo would be on the mid-heaven.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that what we're saying?
Right.
So if you're born in the middle of the day, the sun's above you.
Yeah.
In the chart.
Yeah. And it'll be like, let's say the sun rises around six in the morning.
Yeah, let's say that. Yeah.
So if you're born at 6 in the morning, you would have, your rising would be the same as your sun sign.
Yes.
And
such as myself, I have the same. The sun and rising is the same.
Yeah.
Sign.
Exactly.
And you're born at midday-ish, so your sun is at the top of the chart.
So it's just a couple signs away.
So it does depend on the time of day where the sun's going to be.
Yeah. And also where you're born. Because if you're born at the, you know, very, if you were, you know, where you lived in South Africa, obviously it's going to be, you know, very different from being in Vancouver, for example. Mm-hmm. The sun will be...
Yeah. So we take all of that into consideration.
Yeah.
Every chart's got a sun.
Yep. Yes, indeed.
And it really is where you start, isn't it? It's where you come to astrology through the sun.
Oh, yeah, because everyone knows their date of birth.
They
go into a gas station gift shop and, you know, they'll find a mug that has, you know, okay, I know what day I was born, so I'm an Aries or whatever.
Yes.
And that's usually the first introduction that you get to it is some cartoonish drawing on the side of a mug or something. Isn't it?
Yes. It is.
Mm-hmm. But funnily enough, and that is a word, funnily, the sun sign actually was not what astrology was known for up until quite recently, and, you know, relatively speaking. It was not until this century that when you would talk about your horoscope, you would not be speaking of what sign you are, you know, you wouldn't say it that way if you were, you know, speaking 100 years ago, or let's say 150 years ago, because it was Alan Leo, right, who sort of pioneered the whole sun sign thing with the mail order little cutout delineations.
Yes,
and
yes.
And basically paring it down to something very simple and very mass marketable, which is great, mm-hmm. but also had a bit of a downside because it does simplify an ancient and very complex science that takes into account all the planets and was used by kings and world leaders for...
Well, back in the day, astrologers were someone, weren't they?
Oh, big time.
Now we're down a penny, aren't we?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, they wouldn't make a move in, you know, the ancient Alexander, like Queen Elizabeth I. All these people had big name astrologers on the payroll. They wouldn't make a move without them. And arguably, they were better for it, you know. They seem to be able to play the...
Mm-hmm. So astrology became more popular because it was easier to understand.
Yeah.
And that was through the actual sun signs.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. I mean, because it's very easy to know what day you were born. Most people don't really know what time they were born unless they've actually had a reason to.
Even these days, people
even these
don't
days,
know that,
especially, yeah. Yeah.
Happens all the time, actually. People don't know what time.
Oh, yeah, born. Definitely. I'm more shocked when people do know or have any idea.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Really?
Yeah. But it's a good thing, and Leo, thank you. If you're listening to this podcast, you probably
Apart from us.
You probably had a bit of a lecture, you know, at one point or another about, well, actually, it's more complicated than that.
Sure.
So, you know, we won't go into that in great detail because I'm, you know, yeah. But it is history, and it's what brought us to...
Where we are today. Right?
Yeah, which mm-hmm. is great. The popularity is great. It's a foot in the door, certainly, just having that much information out there.
Yes.
Yes. So let's see what we keep saying, what the sun means in your chart. Well, it means it's basically who you are, actually.
Your identity.
Your core self. Whereas the rising is more like your persona, your sort of
the facade,
the first impression that you give, or kind of how you present yourself when you're not trying or when you're not putting on a good face or trying to impress someone
It's like when they say get your game face on, that's your ascendant, you're putting it up, you know.
Yeah, and it can sometimes, I think, act without your will. Like, it's, you know, sometimes when you meet someone and they seem like really, they're not at all like what you get when you get to know them, and you think, wow, that person is nothing like what I thought when I first met them.
That's right.
Well, probably their ascendant is a very different sign from what their sun sign is. That's that frequently explains that. So the sun is your core person.
So depending which sign your sun is in as well, will show whether it can be strong in your chart. Not all suns are strong.
Yes, totally.
And some are kind of stronger than others, and some are not as strong as others. So even if you have someone who is, say, got an Aquarian sun, and they say, gee, I'm an Aquarius, but all their planets are in Pisces, just next door, you're going to get this Pisces favor overshadowing the Aquarian sun.
Definitely, sort of weighing it down soggily.
Yes. Just saying, get to the back of the queue, we're talking now, kind of thing.
Yeah, that does happen. That is very true.
So, yeah, so the sun is strong in Leo and Aries, right?
Yep.
And it's not as strong in Aquarius and Libra.
Yeah.
Unless it's ruling the ascendant or any other these places. To be honest, it's difficult for other planets to outweigh the sun in the chart. I haven't got yours in front of me, but I don't know if it does there either.
It's, you know, sun, moon, and Mercury all in the same thing.
Oh, yeah. So Mercury's pretty darn strong there. Yeah. So in that case, probably, because it's in its own sign.
Yeah, exactly.
But very often the sun is very powerful in someone's chart, and you really would want to pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And that's what's so great about people who have a lot of Leo is that the sun is in its own sign and it's very powerful in its own sign, and you know, you have this, you know, grand shining
this overwhelming. I know.
Can be, but you know, in a good way usually. But it's funny though, because I've noticed, especially with, I'm gonna be making some friends upset maybe, but I've noticed that one of the things that does tend to sort of temper the Leo shiningness is if there are a lot of planets in Virgo. Especially for men, strangely enough. With women, it doesn't tend to do as much damage. but whether it's a Virgo sun with Leo moon or a Leo sun with Virgo moon, I've found that both of those are a bit of a complicated combination sometimes. Have you found that? Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
you see, if the, say for instance, if the sun is in Leo, then you can, in that particular chart, you can then get Mercury in Virgo, and you can still, at a stretch, get Venus in Libra. So all of those three could be very strong for you, and it does depend on the combination of the planets there. And they're strong in their Virgo and they're strong in their Libra, whereas if those two are in Leo, they haven't got a chance.
Right, and they're all in their own sign. That's the thing we're saying. It's very interesting.
But if they're close to the sun in Leo, they haven't got a chance. The sun will outshine them all every step of the way.
Yeah. But there will be like a kind of, it's a conflicted personality though. I mean, even though the sun will definitely outshine those other two things, it's, you'll have a lot of just sort of inner, you know, It's not the kind of person that presents themselves as a completely united front, usually.
Exactly.
With those.
So, but you would only know this if you went to an astrologer, where your sun was and how well placed it was, and whether it was all by itself in one little sign.
Yeah.
And you're going through life saying, I'm an Aquarian.
Yeah.
Which you may very well be. You
might not feel like one.
All your stuff's in another sign.
Yeah.
That's who you're going to come across as. And this is why people say, yes, but I'm an Aquarian, you're so she, and we're totally different people, therefore. Astrology doesn't work.
But this is the curse of the Alan Leo simplification, and not to blame him, but you know, yeah, it's course all not, you know, all Leos are not the same, but there's a whole lot of other planets.
But that's why, because the planets are in different signs and therefore can react differently,
in different houses and different aspects to each other.
Yes. So your sun is in Virgo, and therefore is not a bad sun, really, in Virgo. It's not here nor there.
No, I think it's pretty good.
What I'm saying is your Mercury is strong there.
Yes, yes, totally. Because Mercury is, exactly, in its own sign in Virgo. And
and your Venus is, sorry, just remind me.
In Libra.
Oh, there you go. Again, you see, this is what I was just saying.
Yeah.
So between your Sun, Mercury, and Venus, your Mercury and Venus are strongly placed over your Sun.
Yeah, definitely.
But when we look at the sun as well, we would also want to know which house it's ruling, and that is the cusp of, if which house is Leo on the cusp of.
Right.
Because the sun will rule that house. So even however your sun is placed, it's going to have something to say about your chart.
Yeah, absolutely. And that will also depend on what time you were born.
Yes.
If you don't know what time, then you won't know anything about the houses. So it's important to...
I know, there's so much, isn't
look
there?
Look it up, ask your mother... Ship away for your birth certificate or whatever you have to do.
But if you do happen to have a chart in front of you,
you
can look at the sun, look at what the sun is ruling in your chart, and that's interesting because in your case it's ruling your midheaven and 10, So that's your career.
Yeah. Actually, it's not on the 10th house cusp, it's on the 11th house cusp, but it's almost the whole 10th house. Yeah.
I thought your midheaven was in Leo.
It is.
Therefore, the sun rules your 10th
house. Oh, sorry, I thought, I was just kidding.
So the sun rules your whole, anything that's going on in your 10th house, whatever's going on in there.
Yeah.
And therefore your career, your public standing, your status in the world, come across Leo.
Yeah.
Would you say that's the case?
Oh, sometimes. Yeah. Yeah, I guess so.
Oh, you're shy pussycat. You've got lions and shy pussycats.
I know. It's like the strength card in the tarot.
It is.
Lady and the Lion. Yep.
It's, did you want to go into acting? Did you take drama?
Oh, God. Yeah, really? I mean, I desperately wanted to when I was younger.
Yeah?
When I was all the way through high school up until senior year when I had to suddenly decide on a college or forever forsake the decision to go to college, which, of course, was not an option because I was in a very high school and everyone was going to college and, you know, what do you mean you want to be an actress? So
what happened?
I went to art school.
You went to, oh, well,
I still
you
managed
go.
To, you know, do something completely.
So you were able to express your creativity through that, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but no, that was my whole thing before when I was... All the years I was growing up. Yeah, that was definitely...
Interesting. How interesting. Mm-hmm.
Of course, as an adult, like, I know that that would have been just a terrible career choice for me.
Why?
Because I'm not at all the kind of person who can promote myself and court rejection, which is...
you take it to heart.
Well, I mean, it's just what you have to do to be any kind of actor or anyone in that whole thing is just... It's really awful, actually, for someone, like, you know, shy. And,
for a strong Mercury in Virgo person, Venus in Libra person to support that.
Just to think about the whole, just
that Leo midheaven,
that naked ambition and, you know, shameless self-promotion and just...
That's not you.
No, just, you see,
because that's interesting, because this is what we're saying, that your sun in Virgo is like, well, it's just neither here nor there, and you, your Mercury and Venus are stronger there. You see that, even though that's on the midheaven.
Yeah. But I found little ways to be famous in all the jobs I've had, strangely enough.
There's no way that, and now you've got your name in lights on iTunes.
iTunes, indeed. Yeah.
Yeah, so the sun really does, it's where you start when you're going to do some kind of interpretation. We all know what our sun signs are, and we, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So that is just a bit about the sun as a thing in astrology. There's also a few other sort of sun-centered things we could cover, like solar returns, for example.
Solar returns.
That is a whole science unto itself.
Very exciting solar return.
Exactly. And it's probably something that I would think that when people come to a consulting astrologer, it's one of the things that
you print the... Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like you would get the transits that are going on, you know, for the next little while, and probably that would include solar returns.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
So tell us what a solar return is.
Thank you, Arwen. A solar return is happens every year on your birthday, on the day before or day after, when the sun comes around the zodiac and it gets to the exact degree it is, the exact degree and minute it is in your natal chart, that is the time of your solar return. And that will be a day, it's usually your birthday. And
but it won't be necessarily the time you were born, the same time?
No.
Oh, interesting.
But no, it'll be at this, it always moves, so it's always a different time of the day. And also...
And that's how you end up with a different rising sign in your solar.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the idea is that when you cast a solar return chart, you do it for the exact time that this sun gets to that position, wherever it occurs in the chart, and that you would print that, and that would be your solar return chart for the year, say for 2014, and that would be in place as a forecast tool for the next 12 months.
Yeah, well, that's fascinating.
And the sun moves backwards four houses each time and then shifts as it goes around. So it takes 12 years to go through all the houses.
Uh-huh.
So whatever house it's in for this year, that's where your spotlight is.
Excellent. And it'll be in the house, the previous house, the next year.
No, it rotates. It goes fours. 2, 5, 8, 11, and shifts. Okay,
it's a visual thing. No, it's cool.
In a different house each year, and whatever house it's in, I don't know where, do we have one for anybody here?
No, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
So if we had a solar return for Arwen and say it was in your third house...
Let's say that.
Your spotlight for that year would be on communication, taking a class, self-improvement,
doing things
learning
the
something more.
Yeah.
Could you learn any more? Yeah. Cramming more in?
Always.
Or whatever it is.
Because
that's where the solar return, where the sun is in a solar return, is the spotlight.
Right.
So you don't have to interpret the whole darn chart.
Yeah.
You need to know where's the sun... And only solar aspects. That's all you need to know.
Interesting.
In a solar return chart.
Cool.
Have you used them before? Do you?
I have. I've not cast them for people because I don't do consulting things.
Work.
I've gone on to astro.com with their little free charts that they let you do. Thank you, Astro.
So you'll cast a solar return chart every year for your birthday.
Yeah.
And it lasts for 12 months.
Yeah.
The idea is that each year you have to focus on something else.
Yeah.
So what's nice about a solar return chart is that if in your natal chart the sun's in the 10th, you're stuck with that.
Yes.
When you have a solar return, you have an opportunity of living through that sun in whatever other house it's in.
Yeah.
If you're aware of it, you can make the most of it.
Definitely. Because every year is different, obviously.
Every year is different. 12 years and it goes round and moves on. Now, the thing is that the solar return chart is cast for where you are on your birthday, not where you were born.
Right.
So if you go to Mexico for your vacation, which I happen to do one year, you have a solar return chart set for Mexico.
And then it's the same all throughout the year, even if you go home.
Yes, because it's the time of the actual return.
Yeah.
So you find many, I don't know if you know them, but I know astrologers, you actually travel to get a better solar return chart.
And that's not cheating.
Well, if you feel you can't do with another solar return 12th house sun year, and you want to push it into the first, maybe you go down to LA for the weekend.
Yeah.
You have your solar return there, and that's set for your year.
That's a good excuse to go away for your birthday anyway.
Well, I know people who do it.
Yeah.
You don't have to really move far from your place if you want to avoid certain houses.
Yeah.
Which, let's face it, one does.
One does, yeah.
Doesn't one? One does not relish a 12th house solar return. Why would you? And
so, off to Cabo San Lucas.
Pardon?
Up to Cabo San Lucas. To avoid
the 12th house.
Oh, some place in Mexico.
Oh, yes,
Love
yes,
used
yes.
to stop there. I don't know. Cabo San Lucas.
Well,
I've never been there personally.
Okay, so whatever.
I hear good things.
But sometimes you only have to go down as far as Bellingham or something, which is just down the road, to make that shift. If you're on a cusp, you can shift it one way or the other if you have your birthday elsewhere. So that's kind of interesting about solar returns. I rather like that.
Yeah. Yes.
Sometimes there's really not much you can do because most people do have their birthdays in their own comfort of their own home.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's kind of interesting.
But if it's, to avoid a 12th house, solar return.
Who wants to spend... Well, it depends what you're doing, right?
I'll be back tomorrow.
And if you want to spend 12 months writing a book or doing some super research, sure. But otherwise, if you're... just get on with life, right?
Nice.
I don't know. So that's kind of interesting. But it only lasts 12 months, and then by the time you get your next birthday, you cast another one.
Yeah.
So this is why astrologers encourage clients to come on their birthday month.
Yeah.
Because not only can they use then the other transits, progressions and everything else, they can then use the solar return chart for that year. Otherwise, they've got to cast two, one for this year and one for next year.
And it's great for, speaking from the research astrologer's perspective, I would think it would be great to see the same people come back and tell you how their year, their previous year went.
Yes.
And then, you can tie it all together and compare notes and see how they were able to use what you told them the year before.
Exactly.
Who doesn't want all that
feedback? For yourself,
feedback?
If your solar return sun ends up in your sixth house, then it's just going to be work that year. You might as well just buckle down and do it.
Yeah.
And if it's going to be fifth house, you might as well, have a ball, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But you can work with the sun and not against it. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And if it's in the first house, that really has to be self-improvement on many levels, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I know.
Well, let's see. There are a couple of people who have very strong solar charts that I was able to find on the old astro theme, the old percentage sort of list, who has the highest percentage of, the sun's strength in their chart.
Okay.
And of course, these are Leos, which, because it's ruled by the sun and the...
Yes.
Blah, blah, blah. But they also both have Leo rising.
So who do you have?
I have... two people who are virtually synonymous with fame in different ways. Andy Warhol is the first one, and Cecil B. DeMille is the second one. And in their own time, and even now, actually, if you say those names, people get an image of...
Soup cans!
Yeah, exactly. Soup cans in one case, and dancing, flashing lights, and chorus girls, and... Gosh, the greatest
showtime.
Show on earth.
The greatest showtime.
Right. They both basically redefined what fame was in their own time. I think both of these guys, probably character-wise, couldn't have been more different. And who really even knows what Andy Warhol's personality, was underneath all of the whatever? But he said everyone will be famous for 15 minutes. Turns out he was right.
And isn't it amazing? And people lap it up when they are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're all probably going to be way more famous even than we would want with, Facebook and...
Well, I don't know. I haven't had my 15 minutes yet. Have you had yours?
Well, I don't think so. But, if you put it all together...
We live in hope.
Yeah, gosh. Coupled together surveillance cameras, footage from walking down the street and bank machines and everything. Oh, that's probably way more than...
The world knows your name.
Way
right?
more than 15 minutes. Yeah. But yeah. It's funny when you... when someone makes the news for doing usually some criminal thing and they've patched together like a 15-minute segment for the news from... weird footage that that's everywhere, that even some news crew can get a hold of, and I bet you that just about anybody there's that much footage.
Well, have you Googled yourself recently? I mean, it's all there, isn't it?
Oh yeah, thankfully not video, but well, actually no, there is now. Oh boy, yeah. That's okay,
so Andy
minutes.
Warhol was
Andy Warhol.
August 6, 1928.
Indeed. Yes, he was an American artist, in case anyone doesn't know who he is. American artist, he was a central figure in the pop art movement of the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
He became famous worldwide as a painter, graphic designer. He did actually commercial illustration before he became famous for his factory in New York, which was just sort of a hub of swarming, roiling, you know, fame and creativity and weirdness and avant-garde intellectual bohemian everything.
Uh-huh.
The amount of people, the number of famous, you know, names and faces that went through there over the course of however many years, it was basically from the late
Marilyn.
50s. Yeah, and he's cameos of him in movies, like in the Doors movie, for example,
mm-hmm.
or... Well, David Bowie played him one time, which is a really crazy idea. But I mean, like, for example, the Doors movie. There's this scene of they're at this warehouse and you know, Andy Warhol is played by, I think, Matthew Modine, maybe? Crispin Glover. That's who it was. Crispin Glover. Great. Actually, probably my favorite portrayal of Andy Warhol. But he's got this weird phone and he's like, you know, talking to God on his phone that's not plugged into anything, and just a bizarre sort of bizarre character, but basically just I almost see him as like a prism, just mm-hmm. reflecting fragmenting other people's fame in a way, but really you know, got a lot of people interested in art, mm-hmm. in talking about art, talking about what it meant to be a celebrity. He was fascinated with celebrities. He didn't you know, he didn't just sort of use people and chew them up and spit them out, which, you know, a lot of people have accused him of that.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of artists that were sort of in this sort of orbit around him that that didn't come out all that well. I mean, there were lots of drugs and, you know, whatever things going on. And some people were hurt and injured, and you didn't come out of that whole era very well. Part of that probably had to do with their own... Maybe they would have mm-hmm. gone down in a downward spiral without him.
So tell us a little bit about his son, then.
Yeah, exactly. He's got, let's see. So he's got the sun conjunct his ascendant in Leo, obviously.
So that is a powerful position.
Exactly.
It's a double Leo again.
Then it forms a grand trine with the moon and Uranus in Aries and Saturn in Sagittarius. So grand trine.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and he's got Venus and Neptune conjunct also in Leo in the first house. Venus and Neptune conjunct in the first house. That's art.
Art. Okay.
You know, and also just the illusion of art.
Yes.
You know, what is art? Like the, mm-hmm. you know, soup cans. The whole point of that is like, you know, this is a mass-produced image that we see everywhere all the time. Is it, you know...
Is it art?
Is it beautiful? Is it commercial? Is it... It's probably worth more than most of the art. And weirdly enough, one of the most famous paintings ever sold was a car crash... still frames of Andy Warhol's.
Mm-hmm.
It's in black and white. I can't remember the name of it. It's Silver Something Car Crash, and it's basically the car crash that happened in 1960 or 63.
Uh-huh.
Or 63 it was, yeah. And it's just these frames of a movie, and it's, you know, 8 feet by 4 feet or something of car crash. And it's one of the most famous, or not
but most
famous,
of his work was graphic, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, silkscreened mostly,
yes.
Or, you know, he made lots of movies too, but yeah, the Marilyn Monroe print,
yes.
Everyone's seen, I mean, it's on the cover of so many
I know,
like decorating books, you'll always see that everywhere. In fact, I went through and I counted one, I got a book from the library in like great living rooms or something, and honestly, I think I found that picture 6 times, like, in different apartments. Why? But I think I actually had that poster on my wall when I was in my Marilyn Monroe phase, and when I was 11 or 12. So, I mean, yeah, and she was like just the perfect kind of canvas for his approach to the mass production and mass sort of illusion mm-hmm. of her fame. And, you know, it's sort of a hollow, it's like a mirror reflecting itself back at itself, infinity. So there's that. Let me see what else he's got going on in his chart. Oh, yeah, Mercury conjunct the sun in Leo, in the 12th house. It's all about that grand trine, though, with the Uranus and the sun and all those things. And a lot, just a ton of Leo.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
And let's see, Cecil B. DeMille.
Mm.
If the name sounds familiar, but the biography is not coming to you, he was an Academy Award-winning filmmaker from the first half of the 20th century. He's known for flamboyant showmanship and directing dozens and dozens of silent films, and then, you know, musicals and massive productions. He did the Ten Commandments, the Greatest Show on Earth. Just, I mean, his filmography is a mile long. And the Golden Globes Lifetime Achievement Award is named after him. So, gold.
Leo,
the son.
Entertainment. Yeah, productions.
Exactly. In fact, in his filmography, like five titles have the word gold in them. Just coincidentally, I noticed that. He was known as just a tyrant on the set. He was probably
just being a Leo.
Throwing
a tantrum.
If he didn't get along with someone, they were out. Yes. You know, he was probably the one off for whom, you know, you'll never work in this city again.
Yeah.
That's probably, you know, a quote from him. Claudette Colbert famously had a, you know, disagreement with him over some stunt that he wanted her to perform, you know, with fire, I think, involved. He was constantly trying to get movie stars to do, like, incredibly dangerous things because what the hell are we paying you for?
Anyway? Yeah, yeah.
And if they didn't do it, they were out. And, you know, probably their career was not happy after that. But if you were one of his favorites, he cast the same people again and again
as
and again.
As I say, fixed. You're in, you're out, but if you're in, you're in forever.
Right.
So it's kind of...
Yeah, totally. Charlton Heston was in.
Inflexible, but, you know, you it's just one of those things, so
yeah.
I don't know what to say.
No, totally. Yeah, showmanship and flamboyance.
So you're going to put these charts up. Tell us a little bit about his placements.
Yeah, he has. He's got, obviously, the Sun conjunct the Ascendant in Leo. He has also Mercury in Leo, and then a whole bunch of stuff in Gemini and Taurus.
Okay.
He's got Neptune and Saturn conjunct in Taurus on the midheaven. Right? Yeah.
Because Neptune is film on the midheaven.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Movies.
Exactly. And larger than life, you know, all of that stuff. Jupiter also in Taurus right there. Not conjunct, but near. Actually, it is conjunct. Pluto. Pluto's still on Taurus. And also conjunct. So, okay, that's crazy, actually. That's a crazy pileup in Taurus. Pluto, Jupiter, Neptune, and Saturn, and the midheaven, all in Taurus, all.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot.
So imagine how many, as we said, I think we said last time, how many of these Leos are actually with strong suns, and therefore the sun must be a Leo.
Yeah.
Who are in the movies, who are in entertainment.
Yes.
And that's what Leo really is about, right? Even these sports people.
Yeah.
I cast around thinking of somebody's name who play hockey for the whatevers. Professional entertainment is a Leo type of thing as well.
Definitely. I can't think of any sports people because I sports, but but a lot of entertainers, as we were saying last time, Madonna, you know,
yeah.
J-Lo, all these actors.
Absolutely.
Tons of directors.
In the entertainment business, you get a lot of Leos in the entertainment business. And as I say, when they leave the house, it's showtime.
Yeah.
At home, it's different.
Oh, yeah.
But once you step outside, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's like the lion, you know, there's a big show.
I've got the...
And then inside, it's like, oh.
You think of...
No. I'm just picturing the lion, the male one that doesn't go do any of the hunting. They're just like
he's just
flicking their tail,
right?
Just like lying there, lolling in the sun,
flicking the tail, waiting for dinner,
waiting for the chicks to come back with the gazelle. What's left of it?
What's left of the a snack.
Yeah,
it's kind of an interesting. I don't know. I think it's an interesting thing, you know, that it's that entertainment is so big when the big planets are in Leo, and we know that Jupiter's just recently gone in.
Yeah,
and that's great because Jupiter's a fire planet. It's not particularly well placed in Leo, but it likes being in Leo, and Leos like it there.
Yeah,
and entertainment should really pick up. Whereas previously, one would be cocooning at home in Cancer and not necessarily doing the hamburger thing at home.
Yeah,
now it's going to be showtime, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
See and be seen.
It'd be interesting to see what happens in politics with the, you know, Jupiter now in Leo for a while.
Mm-hmm.
We will be hearing a lot about the U.S. politics when the run-up to the 2016 election comes. Yes. We're
working. Just give it to Hillary and be done with it.
Oh, because we have to have a year and a half of...
Oh, is it not even next year?
Oh, good. No, it's 2016.
Gosh,
no. Well, that would be just, that would be way too soon. No, we kind of have 18 whole months of just bickering and fighting and commercials and punditry and all that stuff.
But it's showmanship.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
Grandstanding, all those terms they use for.
Yeah, it'll be much more revved up than it's been.
Productions, very much productions.
Oh, yeah. I will be cocooning with the West Wing on Netflix because that is now on Netflix. And that was my solace during the Bush years. And I think I might be watching the West Wing again.
Really?
Yeah. And I mean, hey, the West Wing president, Martin Sheen, is a Leo. I know.
And you know, it's funny because actually only last week we actually watched the very first episode of West Wing. I never even saw the program.
Did you like it?
Well, yes, it just seemed a little dated actually because of the technology that is available in them.
Yeah, but, I mean, we saw the CRT monitors and went, oh.
It's one of those things we're probably going to get into if we stuck with it, if we have time to get stuck with it. But
yeah.
In our house, there's a lot of science fiction on the box. So,
oh, yeah.
Don't often get a toe in for things, so
yeah.
But it's entertainment, and Jupiter there's got to be a good thing, right?
Yeah.
I don't know how you little Virgos feel about this, but you see, that means Jupiter's going to cross your midheaven.
Yeah.
Hallelujah!
Hallelujah!
You know, you'll have your name in lights. You know?
Well, you know, I have nothing but nice things to say.
Oh, very nice of you to say that in front of me as well.
Well, you know.
It's, you know, it's interesting, you know, there's a reason that we got together, and it has to be that connection there with that.
Yeah. Just think of all the Leos that I've known in the past. Great female Leos, too. Lovely Leos.
So, yeah. I know a lot of people choke on it, but what can you do?
Well.
Nothing.
Yeah. Maybe they get a hairball.
For choking. Good point.
Yeah.
Okay, so you know there's less Leos born than any other sign.
What? I did not know that.
And there's more Virgos born than any other sign. Sorry, are you choking on your beverage? You don't know that.
I didn't know that. Mm. Wow. I wonder why that is. That makes no sense.
Anyway.
Huh.
There you go.
Wow. It's just you, Leos, trying to feel special and wanting to be rare and in demand. That's that is.
I don't know what it is. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
I think we have a couple of book reviews.
We do. I believe you have one. What do you
I
have
do.
For us?
I have a very appropriate one for this episode. It is called Sunshines.
Sunshines.
The Astrology of Being Happy.
Oh.
Which isn't 100% like what it's about, really.
Oh.
I've read it.
Bait and switch, is it?
Well, not really. But, you know, it's... It's actually more interesting than that, to tell
Fantastic.
You the truth, I found. It is by Michael Luton.
Excellent guy.
So interesting, so entertaining. He's also got some videos up on YouTube that are definitely worth watching. I'd recommend them.
Uh-huh.
He is still, or possibly formerly, astrologer for Vanity Fair. It's right on the cover.
Oh.
I think it might have... He might not be anymore, but he was, as of recently, quite recently.
Uh-huh.
Did the horoscopes for Vanity Fair and wrote this book and a few other books, which are also very entertaining and interesting.
Uh-huh.
One of them is no longer in print, I believe, but very worthwhile. It's
This is the only book I know that he wrote, because that's all I know about him.
I got the other one from the library, and then I tried to find it on Amazon, and it wasn't the first sale. But that was actually a few years ago. They may have reprinted it. It's very interesting. It was the other one. I'm just going to tiny tangent about that one, because it was fun. Maybe I'll link to it if it's, you know, actually for sale. But it was all about if your mother and father are whatever signs, what your childhood was like.
Yes.
And I don't remember the name of it, but I'll, you know, look it up. Very true for me. Very true for our producer and a couple of other people whose parents I happened to know what sign they were, and it was just quite it's one of those books that you read passages of out loud and everyone laughs and laughs.
So what were your parents? Sagittarius and?
And Aquarius.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I can't quote verbatim, you know, or even remember what the main headline was of it, but it was just darn funny.
Okay.
Darn funny. Yeah. Oh, and we don't, my Roger and I don't have children or plan to, but what it said about Virgo and Scorpio as parents was hilarious. It was basically like, you'll be nitpicked and examined to death by like the evil, you know, overbearing.
And if you don't have children, you either put it to your pets or your clubs.
It'll come out somewhere, yeah.
And am I right?
And the, yes, oh indeed. Our friends that were that we were reading it out loud to were like, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. So,
but that's not this book. This book is Sunshines.
Okay, Sunshines.
It's also very interesting, very well written, very, uh-huh. You know, engagingly written. And it has sort of, it has its own little system of, so you don't actually need to know your chart. But if you do, there are whole other methods of figuring out what to read in it.
Is it like a beginner's book, would you say?
Not really, but it's
okay.
It's written as though it could be, but I think it's better if you know a bit mm-hmm. more and then can kind of... There's a whole chapter in the back that he goes into exactly what the system is that he's talking about, which is basically the North Node and South Node in a sign and a house.
Mm-hmm.
And the system that he crafts for that is a little bit different from the system that we know and love as astrologers that look at our actual chart. But once you know that, you can go back and read the relevant chapters, and it's super interesting either way. But the first method that he goes into in the first chapter is basically sort of a sun sign way of doing that, which is also really interesting. And I've found relevance and nuggets of truth in both. Right. So I've gone through them and actually read now, like three or four different.
So it's not just sun book.
No. It's actually about the node.
I actually have it, but I'm just trying to get you to.
I know. And it's so you know why it's hard to describe. It is actually...
Over to you, Owen.
I know. It's bizarre, but I'm going to read the back.
Yes.
I'm just going to defer to the back of the book here. It's probably easier.
Get a feel for it.
So, Vanity Fair's hip and wickedly funny columnist knows your naughtiest, darkest obsessions. He also knows where you can find the road to lasting joy. Sunshines is an astrology book like no other, which I think you've probably gotten that idea from the two of us. Eerily accurate and deliciously witty, it takes you deeper into your sign than you've ever been before, identifies the patterns you get hooked on, and then shows you how to find the happiness everyone deserves to have. That is a promise. It is also bright yellow, and it's got this fantastic motif on the cover that looks a lot like maybe the boomerang linoleum pattern from the countertop in the 50s kitchen kind mm-hmm. of thing. You know what I'm saying? It's super cool. It's bright yellow, and it's got a great font.
Is it?
It's very happy. It's a happy book. And I used to...
Yeah.
I still do have my books...
The constellations, aren't
organized by color a bit. So it's you know, it doesn't go with any other books on the shelf. It just stands right out.
Okay.
You know, which is cool.
Excellent.
It's very entertaining and interesting book. And insightful. Michael Luton's Sunshines.
Good. I heard him speak at Soda when I was there, probably the year before last or the year before that, or I can't remember when it was. And he really is an entertaining,
cool,
witty,
yeah,
well-read, you know, really yeah. everything you want in like an MC type person nice. for these things. So yeah, and I know he always opens at UAC, doesn't he? He does
a little song.
Yeah, he does the entertainment. Mm-hmm. He's been doing it since the dawn of time.
Yeah.
So.
Mm. I found online a video from Thank You, Chris Brennan. He posted this video from 1986.
There you go.
Of
a dawn of time.
UAC conference.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it was the first one in San Diego ever. Yeah, 1986.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I haven't even gotten all the way through it yet, but apparently he does a little...
Yes, set yes.
In that video.
Really,
so I'm working my way through it. It's like 2 or 3 hours. So I've seen like the first 45 minutes of it. Mostly it's just like, wow, look at the hair, look at the shoulder pads, and who is that, and see if I can recognize
anyone.
What
are they wearing that for? Yeah.
Oh, I remember 86, so it's less what are they wearing than, oh, wow, just, wow, headbands and shoulder pads.
Olivia Newton-John was
shoulder pads.
Yeah.
I was all about the neon earrings, big dangly earrings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway.
If you've got an image from there, we can...
No.
Are you sure?
Positive.
anyway.
Yes.
Okay, so anyway, the book I'm going to want to talk about today is actually shameless self-promotion, but what can you do? I recently got out my second PDF ebook, which has been so long coming, I don't know what took so long. Introduction to Chart Analysis, Intermediate Course Workbook includes questions and answers. So this is the actual workbook for the courses I've been teaching for the last 15 years. And what I've done is I've taken all the course notes, which is over like 90 odd pages or whatever it is, and compiled them into a PDF ebook. And each of the chapters that goes through ends with questions about what you learnt And then the answers are conveniently positioned at the back. So if you want to learn astrology, that's what this is about. Introduction to Natal Chart Analysis. It follows on the first one, which was the Introduction to Astrology, which is the basic beginners. This is intermediate.
Wonderful.
So I finally managed to get it out. And some of the chapter titles are chart balances, planetary weightings, other considerations. Doesn't that cover everything?
Other
considerations. which includes blending retrogrades and all that sort of thing, Gorkhalin sectors. And then there's aspects, aspect patterns, where to start with natal chart interpretation, and then chart synthesis with, I have example interpretations for financial, romantic and career questions.
Wonderful.
So it's just, yes, thank you for saying that.
Well,
it's...
Congratulations, that's fabulous.
I know, I thought this day would never come. But anyway, it's out there, it's on my site, and it's actually on a...
Starsology.com.
Yeah, Starsology.com. And, you know, the idea was that I can only teach so many people in the classroom face-to-face. And in my life, I will only meet, I don't know, 50, 100 people. But this is now available to people who live miles away. And most of them who buy it don't even live in Canada. So it's for people who perhaps can't get to workshops or classes or don't want to get out. And you can work on it at your own pace.
Wonderful.
So it actually is the book from the classes I teach. So
excellent.
Yeah, I don't know why I didn't do it.
It's the take home Alice.
Pardon?
It's the take home Alice.
It is. Probably more in the book than you would get in the notes, but when you do the classroom lesson, I'm there to answer the question.
Right.
Whereas when you convert it to a book, that's what takes so long. You have to fill in all the gaps that you would have said.
Yeah.
We'd imagine there are mountains of words. So, anyway, that's what I wanted to just say, introduction to natal chart analysis.
We'll have a link to that, obviously, in our show notes.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So that's what I've got for us there.
Wonderful. Right. Well,
I think that's us, isn't it? For the sun this time.
Indeed. Find us on iTunes.
Yes.
As we say.
We're very pleased to be on iTunes.
We are.
Very pleased.
Search for us, Access Astrology, or just Astrology on iTunes. You can also go to our website and find all our show notes, all of our previous episodes. Subscribe there also, accessastrology.com. And you can email us, accessastrology@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, @accessastrology. Positive. Access Astrology is produced and recorded by Roger Aaron Toews. I'm Arwen O'Neill.
And I'm Alison Price.
Thanks for joining us.
See you next time.
Mm-hmm.